recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Schenneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers and electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you hit download, play on your iPod, iPad, Surface, or whatever device you're using, your computer, and listen to the show. One of the challenges of e-discovery for law firms is dealing with the technical side of e-discovery. Processing data, hosting data in tools, and leveraging analytics are all skills which lawyers are not taught in torts, contracts, or property law. Frankly, it's one reason why e-discovery is such a bumpy ride, is litigators are trained to litigate, and they oversee a process which has become increasingly technical as evidence and potential evidence shifted from paper into electronic format. I think this is a real interesting trend, so I intend to do a few shows on this topic where we look at the strategies of outsourcing, specifically on today's show. And then I've already talked to a couple firms that have tried to adopt the entire process where they want to be the vendor. And the last strategy, which seems to be the worst option, is doing nothing, which it might be hard to find a guest to speak with us, but we all know it exists out there. So our guests for today's show are Dave Carney from Cohen & Grigsby and Mark Lindsay from Exact Data Discovery. David Carney is the Director of Technology Services at Cohen & Grigsby, where he advises on technology, legal project management, and e-discovery litigation and support processes. David has years of experience managing technical staff, or recommending, implementing, and managing hardware, software, and workflow solutions, including e-discovery and project management, and has authored articles on e-discovery management practices, forensics, and other topics. Mark Lindsay is a senior e-discovery project manager at Exact, which is also known as XDD, a national provider of e-discovery services, including collection, processing, hosting, and review. XDD is located in 16 markets locally and two internationally in India. Mark is a summation certified trainer, holds numerous IT certifications, including A+, Network Plus, and Microsoft Office. Previously, he was a litigation support specialist for a Fortune 500 corporation and worked in litigation support for law firms in Dallas and Fort Worth. And prior to stepping into litigation support, Mark spent over 10 years in IT roles such as network administration, system support, and help desk work. So, Mark and David, thanks for joining us here on the show.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Also, before we start, I'd like to add these are the views of the guests as individuals, and they don't reflect the views of their organizations. So starting off here, Dave, before we get into this interesting topic, tell me a little bit about how you first got interested in e-discovery and maybe include a description of Cohen & Grigsby.
I got started in litigation support and slash e-discovery, as it's known today, in 1997. And it came along with my overall technical responsibilities of helping to run and support a local office network and its end users for an international law firm. This particular office of the law firm was also the litigation hub for the firm. So I ran the firm-wide technical infrastructure for litigation support from this location. And like I mentioned, what was once automated litigation support or litigation technology, morphed into e-discovery. So I've been walking both sides, the technology, e-discovery, supporting litigation, and helping to manage matters for, it's coming up on 20 years. As far as Cohen & Grigsby, Cohen & Grigsby has over 130 attorneys, over 40 of those within the litigation group. So that'll give you an approximate size of our firm. I had begun observing some areas that needed to be improved upon, such as, workflow. So we needed to develop some internal processes. And before too long, there was a couple of blessings in disguise that occurred a few years ago where we found ourselves in a position to be able to sort of take a step back and examine how we did things with regards to e-discovery and supporting litigation.
Okay. And Mark, why don't you introduce yourself and how you became interested in e-discovery? And if I missed anything on XDD, let me know.
Thank you. I ended up in e-discovery kind of the old saying of getting thrown in the deep end of the pool. I was working information technology department for a law firm in Dallas, had a paralegal walk in and hand me a huge amount of DVDs with concordance load files and said, here, I need this in concordance. It kind of went from there. Got interested in the software, learned the software, ended up becoming litigation support full-time, learning the case side as well as the technical side that I had been using for years. That's kind of morphed into not only working in the law firm environment, but I have also worked a Fortune 500 company in-house, and then now with Exact. I think you covered everything on what we do. Do everything from the forensic collection all the way through processing and managed review services, so we're able to provide that entire spectrum for people.
So, Dave, when you first began exploring solving e-discovery at your firm, what solutions did you see out there to help keep your lawyers updated on e-discovery technology?
You know, one, we could invest into the process. That's building an in-house department, and that really requires a long-term commitment. And by no means is this something that can't be done, but it does require some intensive analysis, more of a make-or-buy analysis, and a 3 to 5 or maybe a 5 to 10 year plan. You know, what an organization needs to look at when developing an in-house department is taking many different pieces into account. And it's more than just buying software and a suite of applications. And that's where I see some firms making the mistake that if they buy this software, all of their problems are going to be solved. You know, a firm assumes a good bit of risks. They face an ever-changing technical landscape and challenges related to talent management and retention. And by no means a final item, but one that needs considered is how the department will be managed and at what points along the process does work get outsourced. More or less, what are the limits of an in-house solution? Somewhere along the line, a matter will need to be outsourced for one reason or another. And what are those thresholds? In-house solutions are not free. There is a cost associated with these functions, perhaps one that's easier to write off if it's internal, but in order to support the in-house department, or rather the in-house operational department, these costs and levels of production need to be accounted for, track to justify additional investments down the road, and even to realize a profit or loss. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. Firms need to take into account an individualized approach when designing e-discovery processes, workflow, and technology solutions. It's really easy, and I've heard this said before, well, let's just do it in-house and turn it into a profit center. But that really requires a business to be set up within the business.
Yeah, I know firsthand many situations. You pointed to it. The technology, you can find technology, but if you only go, 3-4 deep in IT and one partner with us who's a little overstressed happens to yell the wrong way at that IT person, doesn't feel loved anymore, they're gone, and all of a sudden the department is scrambling. That's a risk I think a lot of people undervalue in this process.
Yeah, so, one of the things that sort of the spotlight was shown on an area of outsourcing. So we took a look at outsourcing the function, outsourcing, not outsourcing paralegals, not outsourcing project management, not outsourcing sort of the intellectual property around a particular firm. Outsourcing can be a fantastic alternative to buying people, technology, and developing workflow processes, as well as developing a plan to run and manage an in-house solution or department. Outsourcing the technology platform along with constant upgrades, the technology enhancements, maintaining maintaining a performing infrastructure and workflows, perhaps round-the-clock coverage and support, and partnering with a provider that can do this and has done this before can really take the pressure off of an organization. And I'm speaking from a law firm perspective, but this can also take pressure off of a corporate organization as well. You know, there's organizations that deal with e-discovery, you know, specifically law firms with client matters and related data, and even their own business data falling under a preservation notice, as well as corporations that deal with matters and their own e-discovery processes. You know, outsourcing can really be a good way for organizations to start focusing on their core competencies again. You know, law firms and corporate organizations, they really need to be efficient and effective, probably more so than ever, in what they do and how they focus. And in some instances, neither belong in the e-discovery technology provider space. You know, again, I'm not saying that outsourcing is always the answer, but one that does need considered.
So, Mark, from your perspective, have you noticed a trend in law firms evaluating technology providers such as yourself to help take the technology and process pain away from lawyers and let them focus on the lawyer task?
Yes, I've seen a little bit of a changing environment over the past several years. My time in the law firm, as has already been alluded to, the focus had really turned to let's pull everything in house. Let's bring it all in. Let's do it all here. You know, we can charge money for this, and we can purchase this, and we can do all of this here instead of paying a vendor to do it. And that was a huge focus when I was in the law firm, and has already been mentioned a lot of the challenges that go along with that. It seems more now that as this e-discovery has become so complex, has become so large in a lot of cases, that law firms have figured out a lot of times we can't do both, especially when it gets so large. There's no way we can focus on trying to handle all of this processing and infrastructure and software and all of this when we're also trying to focus on doing the good job for our clients on the other side. We seem to be seeing a lot more of that gravitating back out to us in the service provider industry. Not only needing the technical skills and wanting a service provider that can provide the standard processing, but they also are gravitating toward more of a consulting role. They want somebody, a company who has a staff that has been sitting in the exact same chair they have in the past. They understand what's going on in their life. They understand what's going on with their deadlines and their requests, but at the same time, they understand the technology side and all of this information, be able to handle it. And I'm seeing a very large trend for that being wanted with the service provider than in past days where you just went and picked the shop that could get your stuff churned out fast.
So, Dave, you talked a bit about why you undertook this analysis of outsourcing instead of owning the entire process. I know that you're very active in ILTA and talk to your peers quite a bit. What were the struggles you were hearing from your peer group is everyone sort of facing the same challenges and talking about the same types of issues in this space?
Yeah, and Mark touched on a lot of those points, but the struggles that we specifically dealt with was, you know, technology deficiencies, you know, a lack of some formal internal processes and really too few personnel to handle peaks in matter activity. You know, obviously, personnel just can't be hired for the peaks in workflow. You know, it became very painful for all involved parties. The legal team, the paralegals, those working to support the e-discovery efforts, and at times even the technology team that had to keep the systems running. So those were, you know, some of the struggles that I'm sure are not exclusive, that were exclusive to me or Cohen and Grigsby.
So Mark, how challenging is it to graft a technology company's solutions into a law firm's unique culture? I mean, does communication ever become a challenge given the time pressures of litigation and the short temper some lawyers have when they're in the heat of battle?
Well, of course it does become challenging. And you know, it's challenging whether you're the lit sport person sitting in the law firm or whether you're the person on our side of the fence as well. trying to set up not only to where we can provide all of the technology, to where you can provide all of the services that are needed and be able to do it in a very fast manner a lot of times, but also being able to speak with the attorneys, to speak with the paralegals who a lot of times don't have the technical skills and the technical knowledge. And that can get really tough on the communication side because you have to be able to translate. And, you know, for years and years, we've had the tech guys over here that did the tech work. And, you know, I see those comic strips or things like that where they're just seeing Greek or mathematical formulas flowing when those guys are talking. And so you have to be able to grasp that technology and to bring that technology together, but then also to be able to translate it and communicate with everyone else. And that is a huge challenge.
So Dave, let's dive into some of these problems more specifically. You know, and I've worked in law firms before too, so I'm aware of these. How hard is it to get partners in a law firm on board with making an e-discovery investment? I mean, I know it's hard on bonus time to get people to pay out bonuses sometimes, but just making a big investment in people and technology. Yeah, let's say you're a workers' comp partner, you know, or a corporate lawyer. You know, there's so many partners in law firms. You got to get a vote, right? Is this Obamacare?
You know, it can be difficult initially. You know, but I think there is a realization that e-discovery isn't cheap. Nor is it free, and it is difficult. I think firms are going to find themselves in more of a risk position if they don't address this, whether it's building a true organization in-house, outsourcing, and at worst, like you mentioned earlier, doing nothing, which is probably the worst choice a firm can make. You know, investments in people, processes and technology need to be made one way or another. Initially, I did not make any friends when I made the recommendation to consider outsourcing. But as time passed, the legal services landscape was changing, outsourcing's negative connotations lessened, and I think it was realized that to properly handle e-discovery, help was needed. And I think the partners realized that to remain competitive and to have a defined protocol established, you know, that we needed to invest in a solution that fit Cohen & Grigsby specifically.
So, Mark, being in a corporate structure, do you face the same hurdle in making investments into e-discovery tools? I mean, let's say the next big tool comes along that looks promising. Is this going to be hard for a corporation to say we need to participate with that technology?
Well, a business is a business. So whether you're a law firm, whether you're a corporate, whether you're a service provider, it doesn't matter. You're still going to have the same pushback and the same reservations of management to make an investment. I would say on the service provider end, it's a lot easier than it is in the law firm because that is your lifeblood. To stay prominent, to stay worthwhile in the e-discovery realm or in the service provider realm, if you don't make those investments and you don't make those upgrades, you're going to lose your business. And it is definitely easier, but you still have to go through the justification process and showing what you need and why you need it.
So it sounds like it's about core competency, and that's one of the big advantages of the outsourcing. Dave, does that challenge of keeping up with technology, you know, ever stop? Can you solve it in 1 year and move on just to practicing law?
Yeah, in a simplified form, yes, you can. You know, if the firm has the right people and has established the right relationships with service providers or partners, you know, I think the issues can be resolved for the most part. And be more maintained at a measured pace with predictable results. You know, it's the really great thing that I experienced and observed is that when the right people were in the right places at the right time doing the right things, you know, the effort became much easier to manage. You know, I think that the attorneys are much more at ease now that we have a top partner for our overall e-discovery experience. both on, you know, advising on some legal issues as it relates to e-discovery and the technology, the fantastic technology that we now have at our disposal that we wouldn't have been able to have had we tried to build something in-house. And that a service provider that also has a similar arrangement on a national level with other firms. So I think that the attorneys are worrying less and are much less a part of the overall e-discovery technology processes and the pain points than they used to be involved. You know, so now we have a service provider partner, and that partner helps us deal with keeping up with technology as well as many other things. So we can, you know, sort of resort back to our core competencies.
Mark, do you think the law firms understand the depth of resources needed to truly be able to run complex software tools? I'm not talking about, you know, summation and concordance from like 10 years ago. I'm talking about the network intensive, server intensive types of tools that are out there, also processing data and then hosting it on a platform with tight timeframes across a wide geographical area.
I think it depends on the size and the complexity of the law firm. There's a lot of law firms that I work with on a daily basis that understand that. They have identified it. They've done like what Cohen has done and gone through and done these evaluations and understand this is what it entails. This is what we need to do. We have to kind of do some a little bit of both sides here. I think the problem lies more in what I would consider a mid-sized law firm, where people look at e-discovery and the processing piece, et cetera, as more of a profit center. And a lot of times the attorneys don't understand that. They don't understand how deep that pool is as far as what is needed to keep all of this running. And you start that investment process, and then you go in and you say, okay, now we need to do this. And they're saying, well, this has been a year since we just bought this latest round of software. Why are we doing this again? And I don't think a lot of times they understand that. And so the answer to the question is, I think it varies. You've got a lot of really good law firms that have done this research, have figured this out, and I think you still have kind of some middle-of-the-road guys that haven't.
Yeah, and I from personal experience, I know some firms that there was a tool that I was very intimate with for a number of years that did get more complex over time. And I remember the head of the Lit Support Group was literally tearing her hair out, saying, "This is getting more and more complicated to keep this thing running," and we weren't even getting to the redundancy or data privacy type issues. It was just to keep it running. But anyway, let's look at these three choices of outsourcing, owning the process, or doing nothing, and let's look at the pros and cons of each approach, sort of as a wrap up here on this. But what are the pros and cons, Dave, of owning the process? And then Mark, you can talk about outsourcing, and then I'll take the do nothing strategy, since we're never going to get a guest on that.
So building a process in-house, the pros are you can actually, maybe feel more comfortable by having the technology, the people, the processes within your four walls. The cons are that most companies cannot assume the expenses that come along with that, nor the risks. So I think that if you're an organization and you feel comfortable making that long-term investment and you have the resources, the monetary resources behind you and the support of the corporation and the the C-level people at the top, I think that may be a good decision to go. But if you don't, I certainly would not invest in that process.
Okay. And Mark, if you want to talk about, the pros and cons of doing the outsourcing, and then I'll do the do nothing.
But the cons of the outsourcing side is a lot of what was just discussed. The data is not there. It's not within the four walls. A lot of people feel that it takes longer to FTP or to ship or have an account manager come pick things up. things can be done faster if I'm just walking down the hall and handing it to the in-house people. I think sometimes that time constraint mentality goes into effect there. The pros, an outsourced vendor, their job is to stay up on technology, to keep the latest version of the software package, to make sure that it's updated, to have multiple servers, multiple lines, to have the ability to have everything secure and to meet, you know, certain security certificates and things of that nature. A lot of, especially financial corporations now, require such stringent security measures for their data that a lot of times that can't be accomplished in-house and needs to be outsourced. The other side of that is the project management. You have a person that their entire job is to manage that project from start to finish, where you may not necessarily have that ability in-house.
So, you know, I'm going to take the majority approach here, which I think most firms are doing, of doing nothing, although I'm seeing clear trends of outsourcing, and there's some mega firms that are trying to own the process. You know, if you do nothing, you know, you potentially reduce your fights internally because you're avoiding the issue. So it's like issue avoidance, and lawyers can do what they've been doing, and they've been doing it for a long time, and it hasn't, you know, bit anyone in the butt. You haven't had a Howery example from doing nothing, you know, of a firm imploding because they made the wrong investment into e-discovery tools. Frankly, it gets done. You know, clients aren't asking the hard questions about e-discovery. They're usually concerned they've been sued, so they're asking legal questions. You know, you also avoid some of these malpractice questions of, would your malpractice insurance cover you if you actually did a complete outsource or did a complete own the process? Which, you know, runs into more of a technology solution than the practice of law. You know, you're just staying a law firm. You're doing what you've always done. But I think some of the negatives are that you can't really invest and own a process. And, you know, let me make one thing clear. If you're outsourcing or if you're owning the process, you are creating workflows and approaches. You're dealing with the process head on. And, you know, you can't get to an end-to-end solution where you're truly managing review unless you have your arms around the technology side and understand the data coming in. So you can't reduce the costs and effectiveness of e-discovery if you're not doing something, taking a stand in a position within your litigation group, if you expect to handle cases that, you know, have e-discovery issues in them. And the last thing that I think is real important here is, you know, with the new federal rules that are being talked about and the focus on e-discovery and last year's ABA requirements on having technical competence as a lawyer, you know, I think if you're putting your head in the sand, you may be raising ethical issues as a lawyer. And, you know, that's troubling. So, you know, I think, you know, whatever you do, you should do something to try to become good at this if you're going to encounter cases that have e-discovery, which is so many of them. So that's sort of my view on it. Dave, if you do outsourcing, does that box you into one approach?
No, not at all. You know, depending upon the platform and the services that are outsourced, you know, will determine the level of flexibility that you will have. You know, taking the solution in-house for a moment. You know, if you buy software for review, processing, early case assessment, etc., you are pretty much boxed into utilizing those solutions to get some sort of, you know, return on investment back from your overall spend. You know, looking at the outsourced perspective, you know, we need to utilize the solution that we outsourced to help pay for itself, but we do have a lot of flexibility in the review platform that we wish to use, collection services that we need to have in a particular location, as well as the, you know, the legacy paper processes and vendors to be there wherever it is across the country that we need them. So outsourcing the function certainly doesn't box us in overbuilding an in-house solution.
And Mark, what is your early experiences you've seen from doing an outsource approach? What seems to be the biggest benefits?
Well, the biggest biggest benefits, sorry, I got tongue-tied, the largest benefits, I think, with this outsourcing is the availability. It's hard for a law firm to hire a 24/7 staff to be able to handle the requests that we know come in the middle of the night very frequently. Outsourcing allows you not only that 24/7 ability, but like was said, a nationwide ability, the ability to get data from the office in Miami and then grab something from Los Angeles and then grab something from New York when law firms have become increasingly nationalized. That ability is what makes the outsourcing approach seem to be the best, it's best quality.
So, Dave, having gone through the process of going end-to-end and picking a solution, any final tips you'd like to offer to firms considering this approach of what seemed to work or what solutions you may have done differently if you were doing it again?
It is a team effort, and it requires input from multiple positions and different vantage points and requires some key person to keep it all together and moving forward. You know, one of the things that you need to do is to define what you are looking to accomplish, maybe your current configuration, how you do things internally, and what the struggles are. Those became very apparent to us. We didn't necessarily have to dig in because those issues were right in front of us, looking at us in the eye. Treat all potential e-discovery partners, service providers the same. Treat them fairly and have the right people in the right place at the right time. This is not a decision just to be handled by the technology group or just the attorneys or just the paralegals. I was fortunate at Cohen to have a great cross-functional group of individuals that worked through this process once we realized that this was something worth looking at. This is a business decision over a technical one. And just because you can do something in-house doesn't necessarily mean that you should. There are some very good e-discovery partners in the space. So evaluate various ones and pick the ones that best suits, your specific needs and ones that's flexible enough to address the uniqueness of your firm or organization. What worked for Cohen & Grigsby may not work for another law firm or another organization. We sent RFI, RFPs out to 13 service providers. We narrowed that down to the top four, and we ultimately picked one. And we treated each one the same. We treated each one fairly. So it really became a fair fight between the service providers and what worked for Cohen.
And, you made one other point in there that I think is important, being fair to your service provider, because you do – if you beat your service provider up, you may have gotten a good deal, but you may have hurt the potential for that service provider to help you on the next project or even do a good job on the project you've beaten them up on, because they'll have other projects that might be, more treating them more fairly. When you outsource that, I would think that becomes even more important that you want both sides to be successful.
And that was very important to make sure that we went into this with a true partner arrangement. I know the term partner, business partners thrown around, but we were looking at somebody that could help us long term and not just give us the best price for this particular project or go shopping around for price. We wanted a good price, but we also wanted overall great service, great technology, and knowing that this particular service provider was going to be around long term.
Okay. Well, this has been a really interesting, fairly comprehensive show on this topic. I always like to end the show with, since we have different interesting people do the program, any predictions on what next year's hot topic in e-discovery might be? You've each are encountering different types of issues. Dave, if you want to start, and Mark, if you want to throw something out.
Sure. I think demonstrated efficiency and effectiveness with matters needs to become more apparent at the front end of a matter and even throughout the process. I think to the point of managing matters to truly keep costs reasonable from all parties involved is going to be the next area that courts are going to focus on. Runaway costs or ignorance or cost extremes due to inefficient processes. all of that is going to be, or needs to be, if it's not already, scrutinized heavily. As I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, e-discovery isn't cheap, even when it's done correctly. So any added cost on top of the well-defined processes start to go up exponentially when done without having an eye on managing costs for a case.
Okay, and Mark, from your perspective?
I think complexity is kind of the name of the game over the next year, and I think it stems off of what was just said when it comes to costs. Part of controlling those costs is getting more and more complex with searches, with date criteria, with taking certain sets of data, pulling that out, using it, things of that nature. And as that keeps evolving, I think the projects are going to become more and more complex. It's not here, process this, give me a load file anymore. It is more of a true evolving project. And I think that is going to become more and more of an issue as we continue on.
And I agree with that one as well. I think we're going to see a lot of people taking out their wrenches and try to tighten up their processes, especially the people that are making decisions on how they're dealing with e-discovery. I think you're going to see more focus on trying to intelligently cull without skirting the boundaries of the rules, being compliant with the rules, but also focusing on proportionality needs of specific cases, which is the word for the day in the new federal rules that are bumping their way through the process. And I think that the entities that have put the pieces together intelligently have actually got something to attach their wrenches to try to figure out how are we going to intelligently review this and how are we going to maximize the technology impact. I mean, the pieces are all sitting there. They're in boxes and silos. We call the EDRM process. I'm seeing the process barriers and lines and boxes, taking erasers out and morphing them together more intelligently than saying this is box one, box two, box three, and here's cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. How do we make the process work? So that's my view of it. But anyway, I think it's been a great show, and I want to thank you, Dave and Mark, for joining us here at ESI Bytes. It's always a pleasure to have you share your knowledge with us and our listeners and share your perspectives, and hopefully we'll be able to do some more shows with you later this year. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Juranov, for their continued support of ESI Bytes. And to the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our shows. You can remember the show and website phonetically. It sounds out as Easy Bytes. But however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI Bytes you back. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, wishing you a nice day.